Welcome, everybody. Steve, thanks for turning on the heater this morning. You know, I used to think, if I had a time machine, I would, like, go back to, like, 1980 and drive up and meet Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak and be best friends with them so I could get in with Apple on the ground floor. So you guys are just like that. You're on the ground floor as we build and continue. But it wouldn't happen without everybody, Emilio reading every week and my mother playing. We're going to take a few minutes to pray, and I would never tell you how to pray, but what I have found is that I take a moment to clear my mind. When I was young, I thought of prayers as like a Santa's wish list of things I wanted to have happen. And Jesus says, if you ask it in my name and believe it, it will be done. So I do that. But before I do that, I clear my mind of the thoughts and the cares and the worries. He says that he's written his law on our heart and his word on our minds. And so I clear away the other troubles so that I can hear that. And then I pray in power. It's even better to do it with friends at a church. And the best to do it with friends at a church with your mother playing. So we're going to take a few moments and pray. Thanks, Mom.
Thank you. Good morning.
I was at Knott's Berry Farm yesterday, Judah. You would have had an awesome time. But I was screaming on all of the rides, except, ironically, Supreme Scream. Not that one, but the rest of them I was screaming on. We had a great time. Got to spend it with my children and my nieces and everybody. So if I sound a little hoarse or I'm packing a few more bags under my eyes than normal, you'll forgive me. This morning, I wanted to talk about peace through humility. Two things I've learned very well. I spoke last week and I drew a Venn diagram and I talked about how so often we focus on the things that are different. I teach middle schoolers, and so we always have compare and contrast essay questions. And for those of you who have forgotten what that means, compare means list how two things are similar, and then contrast means list how those two things are different. And often we focus on the contrasting events. We're talking about the Protestant Reformation in history class in eighth grade, and talk about focusing on contrasting elements. All Christians, all praying to God and murdering each other because they believed they were right. And so I want to find, as best as I can, I want to follow the Lord. I want to follow the Lord because of the peace that I get. I don't know how you've lived your life, but I didn't live mine so well all the time. And I found a lot of pain, and I found a lot of sadness, and I found a lot of divisiveness, and I found self-loathing, and I found happiness and thrills, and I found everything in between. But since I put my spiritual walk with the Lord first and foremost, the peace that I've experienced passeth understanding. It passed the understanding of a man who had lived for decades in contrasting pain and pleasure. Did that make sense? And that peace came the moment that I humbled myself. I lived my whole life believing that I was right about nearly everything. And sometimes I was right. Sometimes I was wrong. But the peace didn't come until I entertained the possibility that maybe I had to rethink how I was doing things. The humility to take myself out of leading and into following changed my whole life. I can't even explain it. Sometimes I feel like people don't believe me. It was a radical shift at Knott's Berry Farm, at my house by myself, driving in my car in a classroom in front of students. Radically different. Radically different. I still live in the same place. I drive the same car. I have the same children who don't clean their room. Sorry, I love you. Those things have not changed. One thing's changed. Humble yourself in the sight of the Lord, Gabriel. And he'll lift you up. He'll teach you. He'll show you. You've been doing it wrong. This is how you do it. And now I do that. I do it. I don't do it perfectly, but I do it. I follow him. I pray. I listen. I humble myself. Those of you who've known me for some amount of time know that that wasn't always the case. And it's been so, so good. And if I had that time machine to go buy stock in Apple and make another stop in the 90s and explain to an arrogant young man the error of his ways, and save myself so much pain. So, being humble is about being teachable and open to growth. Assuming that you know things to be true locks you out from the kingdom of heaven. In Matthew 18, chapter 18, verses 1 through 6, the disciples are arguing amongst themselves as they are wont to do. Now, a little history perspective. The nation of Israel had been conquered often because of its location. So Israel is on the eastern shore of the Mediterranean Sea. So you have eastern powers like Persia and Babylonia and Egypt, and all of those people are always conquering Israel, which is a small kingdom. Then you have western powers like Greece and Rome. And the Jewish people do not like being conquered, paying taxes to the Gentiles and such. And so they're looking for a Messiah. The problem is they're not being humble. They assume that they know what that Messiah will look like. It's going to look like David, right? A dude who's killing people, cutting heads off, getting work done. So they're waiting. They're waiting. Yearning. And here comes a man who's casting out demons, raising people from the dead. That's our man. That's our guy. Here it comes. And so they're getting ready for it. Ooh, it's going to be so good. You can't defeat the Roman legionaries without a Messiah. The Romans do one thing very well, and that is put down revolution. They also build aqueducts and do a bunch of other things, but that thing they do best. So they're waiting. And as they're talking amongst themselves, they're arguing about the post-game show. Who's going to be first? Matthew chapter 18. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus and said, "Who then is greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" And he called the child to himself and set him before them and said, "Truly I say to you, unless you are converted and become like children, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever then humbles himself as this child, he is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever receives one such as this child in my name receives me." He doesn't say whoever wants to enter the kingdom of heaven must be a child. That's not possible. You must be like a child. When I'm talking to my daughter, it's me giving the life lessons to her. She has not grown into an adult yet, and she understands this. She doesn't always listen. Sorry, that's shot number two. But the Father teaches the Son. The Lord teaches us. So if I assume that I already know what I gotta do, then I'm not teachable. I have to make myself like a child who can learn and who can grow. The peace of mind that I've had has been such a blessing, but what's even greater, what's even sweeter, is the knowledge that I'm nowhere near where I'm gonna be. In 5 years, in 10 years, as he continues to call me out, I'm learning tactical spirituality. He's teaching me. Like the Karate Kid, wax on, wax off. He's showing me how to move forward, how I can be peaceful and loving in a place that's difficult. You go to Trader Joe's, you meet so many incredible people, but not all of them are incredible people. Some of them are difficult, and in that area, that's where my growth is. That's where I'm really getting it. And it shows. But I don't, if I think, okay, I got it now. I've got it, Lord. I'm all figured out. I'm all set. I've got it. Which of us is the greatest? Clearly none of my sisters, so between Judd and I, who's the greatest? No, not even close. Not even close. I'll give you an example. This week, I teach because I love it. I don't teach for the money. I teach because I love it. And because I love it, I feel strongly about it. And because I feel strongly about it, I often have an idea as to how things should be done. And so I was asked to do lunch duty. It means watch the kids on the yard. Of course. A servant's heart. Of course I'll do that. Going out there, and the kids are playing, and we have a child who's special needs, and he was like going in and kind of like, you know, making it hard for the other kids to play the game. So I went over there. I said, hey, man, come on, let's go over here and throw the football. So we were playing, having a good time. And then my daughter came over, and we were playing. And then I had to do something, and I noticed that there was some teacher-student interaction. And I didn't feel that it was helpful to the situation. And because I'm not fully trained, I allowed my arrogance and my pride and my belief that I knew better to get the better of me. And so I went over there and I said, so nothing mean, but the first rule of Fight Club is you don't talk about Fight Club. The first rule of teaching is you do not admonish a teacher in front of students. It's like the worst thing you could do. And I didn't really admonish them, but I said something in a tone that I knew to be wrong. And then after I left, I knew that it was wrong because of the work that I've been doing with the Lord, and I could feel it. It was wrong. But I didn't want to let it go because I felt strongly. People put blood, sweat, and tears into this thing, man. So I thought, I know what I'll do. There's another teacher who saw me. I'll go and ask them, and they'll confirm what I said, and then I'll feel better about myself. But horror of horrors. When I went over there, they're like, yeah, you shouldn't have done that. Maybe you should walked off more frustrated than I had begun with. Just as the kids came back from class and from lunch and I gotta teach them. But I felt the Lord calling me. You were wrong, Gabriel. You were just wrong. You must make it right. You have to make it right. But I don't want to, Lord. I feel stupid and I still kind of believe I'm right. Irrelevant. Erroneous. You must make it right, Gabriel. So I taught the rest of that class, and afterwards I went and found both of the teachers that I had spoken to, and I humbled myself because I needed to. And wouldn't you know it, as soon as I came in the Spirit of the Lord through humility and honesty, the same thing that was in them responded in kind. And something that the devil tried to rob from us and make negative was turned into something beautiful. That's the secret. That's the gospel. That's it. The Lord guides. You follow. I'm going to send you a helper, and he's going to show you the truth. And that truth will lead you into the freedom. The truth is I was wrong. I was wrong in what I said. I was wrong in how I said it. And in years past, I would have lawyered my way into talking myself into believing I was right. Ipso facto, writ of habeas corpus. My sisters are the lawyers, I'm not, as you can probably tell. And shackled myself in my pride and error. The humility unlocked and gave me the peace. John 13, 1 through 20. Jesus tells us his disciples, I always only ever do what I see the Father doing. So when you look at me, you're seeing him. Okay, well, what does he do? John 13, 1 through 20. Now, before the feast of the Passover, Jesus, knowing that his hour had come and he would depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were of the world, he loved them to the end. During the supper, the devil having already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come forth from God and was going back to him, got up from supper and laid aside his garments, and taking a towel, he girded himself. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with a towel with which he was girded. The greatest man who had ever lived is watching Krusty Bunions, because that's what the Lord would do. The humble, kind, loving spirit of the Lord helps us. Even someone like me, he makes me clean. But the disciples can't get it. In the world that they know, in the world that they see, the people in power are on top, and the people with none are on bottom. He came to Simon Peter and said to him, Lord, do you wash my feet? And Jesus answered and said to him, what I do you do not realize now, but you will understand hereafter. Peter said to him, never shall you wash my feet. I love Peter, but he is not getting it. Because he still sees the world in the same way he always has. The Lord's trying to call him out. You got to rethink it, Peter. Never shall you wash my feet. Jesus answered him, if I do not wash you, you have no part with me. Simon Peter said to him, Lord, then wash not only my feet, but also my hands and my head. Jesus said to him, he who has bathed needs only to wash his feet, but is completely clean, and you are clean, but not all of you. And then he refers to Judas. The disciples still aren't understanding, even up until this latest hour. They don't see themselves as arrogant. Maybe that's not the right word to use, but they still have this fixed notion of what the world should be. So they have this fixed notion of what the world should be, of what the Lord should be, about what they should be. And there's no growth there. You're stuck, Simon. You're stuck. You're stuck, Gabriel. You're stuck. But then the Lord shows him. When Simon Peter says, you know, shouldn't wash my feet. I have to, you big dummy, because if I don't... Kind, humble. And then Peter gets it, and he gets on board. Humility does not mean self-deprecation or weakness. Being humble is the strength to question without being fearful. I met a wise person who quoted Proverbs 27 to me. Iron sharpens iron. If we're all just getting together in an echo chamber, what good is there? I tell you what I think you want to hear, then you tell me what I think I want to hear. We're both blind, walking off into the ditch. I wasn't right, which means I got to grow. And not only is that good news, it's fantastic news. Imagine this was all there was. I drive to church and I see people walking their dogs and doing any number of things. And I think to myself, those poor people. They think that that happiness is walking your dog and watching football. Nice, knock yourself out. There's nothing wrong with either of those things. But there's so much more. I love being with animals. I have two cats. They broke all the glass in my house last night. I love them to death. And as much as I love Gizmo and Gadget, that I wanted to name Romulus and Remus, but it was overruled by my daughter. There's more happiness than just snuggling my cats. There's even more happiness than being with my daughter and son, who I love more than anything in this world. It fills me up. When I'm in the spirit, cry like an idiot in front of a bunch of people. There's more than the Super Bowl. And you don't have to think like me. You don't have to do what I do. All you have to do is follow and humble yourself, and he'll lead you. Maybe I took a right and you take a left, but as long as we're following, we all meet up at the same end. I zigged when I should have zagged for 30 years. Longer than that. Iron sharpens iron. In order to make metal sharp, you got to heat it up. You got to bang it and grind it. But in the end, it's stronger than it ever was beforehand. I don't even lament those lost years. Because the life that I live is worth so much. And it's going to get better. It gets better. It gets better. It gets better. Not because of that. Here. Available at Knott's Berry Farm in line. And there's children cutting in the line. There it is. Only when you humble yourself to hear the voice of the Lord will you be able to follow him. Humility leads to peace when we take down our preconceptions and trust God to lead us. I still struggle with fear because I lived so long with it. It's not always easy to imagine a life without it. And when I'm not following the Lord like I should, it overcomes and I think about all of the things that could go wrong with the church, with the school, with my children, with the car, with any number of things, with the country. For years and years, I'd watch political shows and cross my arms and and then when it looked like the people that didn't think like I thought started to get the upper hand, but not anymore. Not anymore. Because the devil cannot take anything from me. He cannot rob from me. Because everything, even the worst things, the Lord can turn to good. When my sister got sick all those years ago, I could not imagine a life without her. I thought, if she goes, I just don't know what I'll do. But the Lord took even that terrible thing and led me through it. When we lost my father, I thought, I don't know what I'm going to do. But every negative thing that the devil tries to take from us, the Lord turns to good as long as I humble myself enough to hear him. I used to shy away from the pain of remembering them. That's why I say I have three sisters, two of them here on earth and one in heaven, looking down, knowing that I'm a good job. And the pain is transmuted into hope and peace because that's what he does. If I can humble myself enough to hear him. I would not dare tell you how to think. But I would urge you to seek him. Find him. Look for him. When I was a younger Christian, I spent all my time trying to tell them about him. Now I seek him. And when I'm abiding in his spirit, people can see it. And I don't need to worry if I'm doing the right thing. Did that track? I'd worry about, am I saying the right thing? Am I doing the right thing? Am I being a person who's helping forward the kingdom of heaven? I don't need to worry about that. Because as long as I'm following him, it will be made manifest. It will be made evident. And if I'm not, then I could talk until I'm blue in the face, scream and clap my hands, and nobody would listen anyways. And they shouldn't. But it's getting better and better and better and better in my life. And I am the first one to raise my hand and tell you, if I can do it, you can do it. And the people around me see it. Because the same thing that is calling me is calling you. Follow him. Follow him. Follow him. On this rainy day, it's the best Sunday ever. Because I can follow him. Yesterday at Knott's Berry Farm, it's the best day ever because I could follow him. Tomorrow at school, a Monday morning, Jude, best Monday morning ever because I follow him. And it's good, it's good, it's good. A sower sows his seeds. Some of it's choked out, some of it's eaten, some of it dries out, but some of it, thank you, Lord, some of it grows tenfold, a hundredfold. I wouldn't give it up, not on your life. The peace that passeth understanding. Close with this. Luke 21:33. I'll just paraphrase. Jesus says, heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will remain. Worry not. When the angels come, the first thing they say is, do not be afraid. Worry not, because he is with you, and he will lead you. In your darkest hour, in your greatest triumph, he will find you and lead you. Seek him. Take a step back. When you're angry, take a step back. When you're happy, take a step back. When you think you're right, take a step back. And if you take a step back and you pray about it and the Lord says, you're right on this, dude, then stick with it. But if he says, you need to grow on this, be humble enough to do that. Not for them. If I had gone over to those teachers and gritted teeth and said, I'm sorry. Sorry you couldn't understand how right I was. There's no freedom in that. He will be faithful. Greater is him who is in me than he who is against me. Seek and you shall find. It's the most important thing you could do. You can also watch football. You can also watch your dog. Walk your dog. You can also do the most glorious of things. Play video games. But before all that, before I play Baldur's Gate 3, you're going to have to wait to roll for initiative. First, we pray. Humble yourself in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift you up higher and higher. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being a part of this. It's worth it. It's worth it. It's worth it, dude. It is so worth it.